Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Looking for the perfect weekend activity for everyone, including the deaf? Then why not come down to Marple Races this Saturday to see all your favourite renowned horses in action? See Two-Headed Sex Beast, Massive Bereavement, Trust Me I'm a Stomach, and many more. Horses, love them or hate them, they're all here at Marple Races, this week's proud sponsor of Monkey Tennis. Come to Marple, place your bets, and enjoy the facilities, but please don't look under the tarpaulin, it might be a dead horse.
Monkey tennis?
You better believe it, babe. There's a new chat in town.
Monkey tennis?
Ice white shoes, ice white socks with navy blue double cadet stripe.
Aha!
Monkey tennis?
I've just been told that Roger Moore is at Chiswick Roundabout.
Monkey tennis?
Oh, what the heck? Rock and roll, let's all have a pair!
Monkey tennis?
Yes, I am in a jacuzzi sipping spunt.
Alan.
And on that bombshell.
Monkey tennis?
Hello and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the podcast proving that Alan Partridge into podcasts does go. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined as ever by Tom Dark.
This is Sports Desk.
Nick Older.
Join me.
And Tom Stab.
Striker!
So today we're going to be talking all about Alan's origins across the whole series of On The Hour and The Day Today. But before we get onto that, some very exciting news. Thanks everybody who came to or enjoyed listening to our live Alpha Papa special recorded at the Prince Charles Cinema in London last year. The good news is we're going to do it all again.
What?
This is news to me.
Although to clarify, you say all again, not Alpha Papa again. It will be something different.
Not Alpha Papa. So yeah. We're going to be discussing and celebrating Alan's antics in Knowing Me, Knowing Yule, the Christmas special. So obviously, we're going to do it a bit closer to Christmas. It's going to be happening on Wednesday, the 22nd of November at Prince Charles Cinema again in London. Tickets are on sale. Hang on, wait for it. Now, you can go to our Facebook or our Twitter page for details. It's twitter.com/thepartridgepod. It's facebook.com/thepartridgepod. Always the same. Yeah, please come along and join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. I watched a little bit of it the other day. I've got lots to say, let's put it that way.
I haven't seen it for a while, so I'm looking forward to watching it and obviously getting in a room again and chatting it with all our lovely fans.
One thing to warn you...
Adam, will there be Boaster's biscuits?
At least two.
And a giant Christmas cracker.
And yes, a giant please. Christmas cracker, yeah, yeah. With fire stewards on standby.
Lovely stuff.
Yes, one thing to warn you about is that the last time we did this for Alpha Papa, it did sell out well in advance, so please do get your tickets while you can. We cannot promise they will be around forever. So yeah, go to facebook.com/thepartridgepod, twitter.com/thepartridgepod to grab your tickets for our Knowing Me, Knowing You festive special. But on with the episode.
Yeah, so we thought we would take this right back to the start and look at the origins of Alan. So in this episode, we're going to discuss his first appearances on radio and in TV. So On the Hour was his first appearance as a character on radio. That was on radio for 1991 and 1992. And then he first appeared on TV in The Day Today in 1994. And then from next week, we'll be discussing Knowing Me, Knowing You, the TV series.
So, is this the only Alan output where it's not all about him? It's the only thing he's done where he's been... Oh, I suppose he's done, like, you know, bits for comic relief and he guest-hosted TFI Friday. But other than that, it's the only kind of... It's the only thing where he forms part of an ensemble.
Yeah.
And obviously, throughout this, Steve Coogan plays other characters as well, but we'll be focusing on Alan for obvious reasons.
Yeah, although obviously there are a few bits of comedy gold throughout these which are worth remembering as we go through. So I have been reading Steve Coogan's autobiography recently, so I can depart some information from that maybe to get the ball rolling.
I think you're the only one. I haven't read it. Is it you the only one?
I've read it as well.
Okay.
I got it.
It was a Christmas present, wasn't it?
But I have got it.
As we know, your eyes don't work.
I thought it was a pint glass.
Yeah, so Steve writes that basically the idea of On the Hour, a spoof news comedy program, was actually Armando Iannucci's idea. So Armando put together an informal pilot originally using real news reporters, which they just decided didn't work because it sounded too formal, because the voices were the real news reporter voices. So for the pilot properly, he assembled Coogan, Patrick Marber, Chris Morris, David Schneider, Dune McCain or McKeegan? I'm not quite sure of the pronunciation.
Dune
McCain.
I think so, yeah.
We're going to go.
Let's go with that.
We're going to McCain. Like the oven chips.
Write in to correct us if we've got that wrong.
Yes, we've probably got it wrong. Rebecca Front and the writers, so people that weren't on camera, also Stuart Lee, Richard Herring, David Quantick, and Stephen Wells. So quite a formidable cast of who are now comedy legends, but back in 1991, this is probably one of the first things they all worked together on. They'd worked on various Radio 4 comedies before.
But, yeah, a lot of people's passport to stardom. I actually briefly ended up working on The Hour slightly because for various reasons, it wasn't released on on CD for a really long time, but it was eventually released by Warp Records about 7 or 8 years ago. And one of the things that I got tasked with doing was getting in touch with all the agents and all the people themselves that wrote it to ask if they wanted a free copy, obviously, or a box. And everybody did, and including old Stephen Wells, who's worth a shout out because the rest of them kind of went on to do sort of TV writing and kind of things in a similar vein. Stephen Wells is probably one of the most well-known NME journalists of the last sort of 20, 25 years. Wrote some incredible and some very scathing reviews before he unfortunately passed away. So he was probably one of the most pleased of everyone that it was actually coming out. Got back in touch with me straight away and was really excited to get his copy, which was touching.
It's nice. I did read on Wikipedia that part of the reason that it took so long to make it commercially available was there were issues with the parts that Lee and Herring wrote.
Yeah, there's a lot of dispute about who created Alan Partridge.
If you read Steve Coogan's book, it's very clear who created it.
Yes, that's true. And also, Steve Coogan was a guest on Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, which is worth a listen because they also touch on it again.
But don't go and listen to that now. Listen to us first and then maybe that if you want to.
Come and see bitter and listen to us.
If only Richard Herring, you know, sometimes maybe mentioned that he was involved in the
writing. He really should.
He doesn't mention it at all.
Tends to gloss over it,
So, what we'll do is we'll take this kind of chronologically as far as we can. So we'll start with On the Hour and then we can talk through our favourite moments from the day to day. Okay, so to kick us off, we're just going to play in here the first ever bit of Alan ever heard on the radio waves with the first ever sports desk report from On the Hour. Here it is.
This is Sports Desk. I'm Alan Partridge. Formula One driver Nigel Mansell gave up motor racing this week as it's too dangerous. And anyway, claims Mansell, I can get the same sensation by sitting in a wind tunnel with dark glasses on and a paper bag of agitated wasps tied over my head.
So I know we should probably talk about Alan Partridge first and foremost, but I've just got this vision of Nigel Mansell sat with a bag over his head of agitated.
I mean, it's interesting. You already get from that very first sketch how you've got the slightly more surreal, absurd elements to the writing of On the Hour, which, and obviously again into the day to day, which those kind of the stranger parts, they kind of get filtered out when you get into Knowing Me, Knowing You.
And that little clip there, it could, like, if you read that and didn't know anything about it or knew where it came in the timeline, that could come like now. It's like, in terms of his character and the things that he says, his sort of the references that he makes and the things that he doesn't really change.
Apart from his accent is very different.
Yeah.
And also I noticed that he does substitute D's for T's while he's broadcasting, which is something later on he admonishes Dave Clifton for doing.
He was slightly inexperienced at this point in his career.
Yeah, he's an eager young buck, isn't he, at the start of his career, which presumably is why he's taken the job as a sports reporter when he knows fuck all about any sport.
Yeah.
Which, and that, to be fair, very shines through.
Yeah.
Yes. He knows absolutely nothing.
the kind of extreme kind of caricature Alan Partridge that people do, like, that's not really present here. It's a little bit more straight edged.
It's more a John Motson type voice.
Yeah. He's much more laddie in his approach as well, isn't he? I mean, these are themes that will go on to continue through On the Hour and the Day Today and Knowing Me, Knowing You, really. But women are there to be described in terms of their appearance rather than any sporting prowess.
But also men, actually, as we go through this, you realise there are, every time he begins describing male athletes or male sportsmen, it all becomes very homoerotic.
I've got written here incredible detail of Linford Christie's groin injury.
So much about groin injuries, like everyone's got a groin injury.
Well, that's that's episode two of the first series of On the Hour. But everyone he talks to, he's asking them about groin strains. Oh, tell me about the groin strain. They're like, oh, I haven't got groin strain. Yeah.
Well, effectively, across On the Hour, it's basically a mix of, if it's a woman, he gets kind of increasingly sexual. Yeah, if it's a man, groin strain. And if there's a sport, he basically misunderstands it in the most offensive way. Starting with golf, I think he misunderstands golf entirely in the first.
Hitting balls around with sticks.
So in episode, it's probably worth, for those that aren't that familiar with On the Hour, so there were two series of it, which were basically six episodes each, I believe. I think the first series, the last episode of series one was episode six, Christmas special, and then there are six in series two as well. 12 overall.
A quick one, I don't know if anyone else has noticed this or noted this, sorry, but did you know that there was a untransmitted pilot as well of On the Hour?
No, I've read about that, but I've not heard it.
Yeah, so there was an untransmitted pilot, and there was no Partridge in it. Coogan was in it, but there was no Alan Partridge.
Well, that will be the Armando one, I think.
Yeah, so Armando Iannucci played a generic sports correspondent called Bill.
Oh.
So technically, if you're really fudging it, Armando Iannucci sort of played the first Alan Partridge before Alan Partridge was Alan Partridge.
If you're sort of fudging it, then
Billy Partridge.
If you're fudging it.
We're doing nothing if not fudging it in this podcast.
Would you like some Steve Coogan insight into the creation of the character?
I'm not really interested.
Okay, we'll skip it.
No, go on.
So Coogan writes that the initial sketch that featured Partridge was written by Liang Herring. He says, they wrote a brilliant, incisive sketch about a sports reporter. It became increasingly surreal and there were no punchlines, but it was incredibly funny. Armando turned to me and said, Steve, can you do a generic sports reporter's voice that's not an impression? And then Coogan does go on to admit that the voice then was very different from the way Alan talks now. It was nasal, it was monotone, it was like John Motson or David Coleman. So that was very much the basis for that voice. But it was just supposed to be a very generic sports presenter. And he made the observation that sports commentators like that, they sound confident, but simultaneously stupid because they never stop talking even if they're stuck for something to say, which is very much a hallmark of Alan in these early sports reporter years, where he doesn't understand any of the sports, the rules or anything, but he will just keep talking and commentating.
In terms of his voice as well, one thing that I learned from one thing they put in iPartridge, which I thought was very clever, they basically explain away the difference in his accent, because he starts very nasal, very laddie,
very nasal,
and he kind of moves on to be less like that. In iPartridge, they explain that by saying that he basically was collared by Des Lynam, a social event.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I remember
who then
that now,
gives,
yeah.
Who then gives him yeah. some advice to beef up, says that he beefed up the nasal.
Lynam was right.
He told Alan not to be so nasal. He said, I had indeed beefed up the nasal quality of my voice, thinking it left a timbre that was trustworthy, authoritative, and basically quite nice.
Doesn't Lynam also have access to the disabled toilets at the BBC?
he does.
Quite possibly. I do love that the attention to detail is such that they'll go back in iPartridge and explain away some of the things they wouldn't have had time to sort out at the time.
Yeah,
like Alan's voice.
Yeah, I guess they've got the beauty of hindsight where they can go, oh, if something doesn't quite make sense, they can invent a reason with having a book that covers the whole history of the character. Yep.
I also love the surreal way that Christopher Morris's newsreader cuts Alan off by saying, shut up, Alan, I want you to stop repeatedly.
How do we think that relationship, because it continues from on the hour to the day to day, how do we think that kind of colours his broadcasting style? Because I feel like that might have played some kind of part in terms of the way that he treats other people.
Yeah, it's a bit like he's always under pressure from Chris as the anchor, isn't he?
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
I also think, and again, it's very similar how it's played out across the radio and the TV versions of this, that Alan's the only regular character that Chris interacts with, really. Most of the other reporters...
Yeah,
he does a bit with the weather girl, Barbara Wintergreen.
Barbara Wintergreen's the American reporter.
No, who's the weather girl that he flirted, or traffic woman, Rebecca Front, that he flirts with all the time?
Yeah, but she's not in on the hour at all.
Okay.
Otherwise, good point.
Yeah, good point, well made.
Yeah, all right, sorry, it wasn't a pint of beer shaped like a leg.
So there are quite a few regular characters that appear in the On the Hour episodes. So aside from Alan, you have Barbara Wintergreen, who's the American reporter.
Rosie May.
You've got Rosie May from Green Desk. And also, they quite often throw over to Radio 1, to a Radio 1 DJ called Wayne Carr. I think that might mean wanker. And if you
it's not very subtle for On the Hour, is it?
No, but that's the thing. Some of the gags in On the Hour are actually just quite basic,
I guess. There's Jacques Ouf as well.
Yeah, exactly. Things like that. But yeah, I think listening to those Wayne Carr skits, it seems to me like that's basically the blueprint for Dave Clifton when you get into later Partridge, really, because he's that kind of cheesy Radio 1 DJ in a kind of Tony Blackburn, Mike Reed sort of vein. Doing the D's for T's and things like that.
He's got the regional broadcaster's voice.
Yeah, exactly.
And coming up.
Yeah,
on the...
yeah. So it's just listening to that, I feel like, I don't know whether Armando Iannucci was very instrumental in the writing of that character, but it feels like they've kind of dragged some elements of that through into Dave Clifton, into I'm Alan Partridge.
It's the Prometheus to Dave Clifton's Alien, isn't it?
That's exactly right, yes.
One bombshell that's dropped in this, which I think we need to talk about how seriously we take it.
I think you know where we're going.
Alan's wife dies.
I know. What is
so
that?
My question is, do we just write this off as a surreal TV flight of fancy because later she is raised from the dead like a zombie? Or do we basically write into the official Alan timeline that he had a wife before Carol?
Yeah, but then she still turns into a zombie, so that doesn't really work.
I expected some closure on that story, but no, just ends with her coming back, raised from the dead, as a zombie.
So is that the last couple of episodes of Series 1?
No, that's relatively near the start.
Yeah, it's early on.
There's a reference to Alan's wife dying, because he was working on an extension.
Yeah, he got a call that she died. And Alan's now in counselling.
Maybe this is why he dresses up as a zombie.
Still, Chris Morris's character does say nice to have some time off.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, in episode 5 of series 1, Alan's wife has risen from the dead.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, I kind of made the note. You just have to... It all works in the timeline and makes sense, apart from that one bit, which goes through a few episodes about his wife dying. And
they probably realised they made a big mistake with that.
It's more indicative of like the Chris Morris, Armando Iannucci style of writing as well, I think, because there are some really surreal moments across On the Hour and the day-to-day which don't work in the normal Alan Partridge.
And they had no idea at this point, presumably, that Alan was going to have any sort of lasting lifespan, that they would need to think about things like him having a dead wife who was a zombie or not.
Yeah, true.
There's also a bit around this point where he says that he could hold his own in a caboodle, Do we think that that is, I know the answer now because I've looked it up. Do we think that that's an actual word? Caboodle.
Is that an
Oxford English dictionary word?
Caboodle. It sounds plausible.
What's the context? Who's he talking
says,
to?
He says he could hold his own in a caboodle. Yeah. I mean, he's used the context incorrectly. I have sort of given it away.
I've definitely heard the word before, but I couldn't.
So it sounds like it is a word, but he's used it incorrectly.
Exactly. It is a word, and it means all the people or things in question, as in the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
But he's taken it to mean like a fracas or like a, right. like, you know.
A set to.
Yeah. Either way, it's nonsense.
Yeah. Classic Alan.
Yep. I love that he describes Duncan Goodhue as toast of the twin worlds of sports and no hair.
Can we think of anyone else who straddles that world?
No, I would say that Harry Hill is toast of the twin worlds of comedy and no hair.
Yeah.
Also, doesn't he talk about how the Dolphin and Otters of the Brighton Dolphinarium have put on a show to raise money for newly haired Duncan Goodhue?
Yeah, Duncan Goodhue is quite a recurring name in the first series.
Nick, you live in Brighton. Is there a Dolphinarium?
Believe me, I looked it up. There was no Dolphinarium. I would definitely go. Mm. Mainly for the otters. I like an otter.
Oh,
not
I love
sure
an otter.
Dolphin. Not sure about that skin.
He also does a really misfired anecdote about putting a turkey in the wrong car, which shows that he is not the king. Yeah. Of anecdotes, so perhaps it's something he had to work on. Maybe Rob Brydon's character at the end of Iron Man and Partridge Series 2 was right, but he actually doesn't know his way around an anecdote.
I think we knew that already. Yeah. We didn't need Rob Brydon to point it out.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's no surprise that Alan's not really the king of anecdotes. To refer back to Coogan's book for a few more points about the gestation of the character, he did say the more mundane the sports reporter, the better. So they were always setting up for Alan to be a bit of an idiot and not know what he's talking about.
He's an ordinary man amongst extraordinary people, isn't he, really?
Good. Yes, that's good.
Well, he'd like to think of himself
as an extraordinary man.
He'd take that.
He is an extraordinary man in a way, but not the way he thinks.
In some respects.
Well, they really thought through the name as well when coming up with the character. So they chose Alan because it seemed like an appropriately sporty Middle England name. It didn't sound bookish. These are Steve Coogan's words. Mm-hmm. It didn't sound bookish. Literary people aren't generally called Alan. Alan would have a nice car on the drive and wear golf sweaters. And then they also, Coogan also went on to describe that they chose Norwich because it was an interesting place. It's not en route to anywhere and is such probably the most isolated city in England.
Okay, flash question to the group. You're looking for a name that is sporty, isn't too literary. It's not Alan Partridge. You need a first name and a surname. Go. What have you got?
Brian Pigeon.
Okay. We got Brian Pigeon. Come on, Nick.
Colin Cloverfield.
Oh, okay. Oh, nice alliteration. What you got?
Barry Crumble.
Okay, shit. I haven't thought about it. let's say Roger Winterbourne.
Ooh,
that's good.
You hadn't thought of that before, hadn't you?
No,
you
just, I genuinely hadn't.
Yeah, and just a bit more from Coogan here. He writes, it was obvious to me that Alan would drive a Ford Granada. He felt like a type. A bloke with a collection of golfing sweaters who religiously washed his car at the weekend. He was slightly right-wing and very judgmental. Very clean. A catalogue man.
Slightly? I guess he is only slightly right-wing.
He is very clean.
He's very right wing.
Yeah. I've never thought about about how very clean he is.
Yeah, hygiene's important.
Yeah, and runs definitely. All the way through. Like Iron Man and Partridge, he likes to shower before and ideally after.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean.
Doesn't he bath in Dettol?
Yeah, and he talks about the soaps in the hotel only withstanding one vigorous body scrub.
Yeah.
I never really thought about the fact that cleanliness is a through line of.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So following on in Coogan's autobiography, he identifies that there are a few recurring themes from Alan in On the Hour. The first being the fact he's obsessed with groin injuries, as we've picked up on. Yep. He's obsessed with groin injuries in a matter-of-fact way.
Sorry, quick question to the group. Have you ever had a groin injury? I think it's important for the listeners to know.
I'm touching wood when answering this. No.
Are we talking muscular? Or are we talking, does I've been twatted in the nuts with a ball football okay, before.
So
does that count as a groin
Tom
injury?
Tom Stabs a yes.
Yep.
I'd say yes.
It's probably a testicular injury, surely.
It's the groinal area, isn't it?
Yeah, but the groin is a specific...
Ah, my groin! Okay. Yeah, well, and that's why I asked if it was muscular or not. Or
I'm glad I brought it up.
Area.
Let's spend some more time on this.
We've all been kicked in the balls with a ball.
How does a ball kick you?
Well, it's been kicked by someone else, hasn't it?
Let's move on.
You asked the question.
Yeah, this is your
I didn't expect such weird woolly testicular answers, though.
So on the hour is also where we find the origin of a distinctive Alan noise that comes back to bite him in the ass in I'm Alan Partridge. Namely, that sort of weird choking sound he makes. In I'm Alan Partridge, it's when he's saying, Chester Harlands. But in this one, he basically describes sumo wrestlers as fat and they get tired of his JP.
Wearing nappies.
Yeah, and then grab him in a headlock. So I think we can, we'll cut to that now.
If I was to, yeah, well, hang on, it's, I can't breathe, I've got to do the interview,
so there you go. It's the choking sound we all know and love.
That's so good.
It happens in the day to day as well. So he gets choked by the taekwondo or judo people or whatever it is. And
it's that comedy sound that just gives it.
But the great setup with the sumo wrestlers there, where again, because he doesn't understand any sports, so he's just saying to them, "Why are you so fat? You're like a big fatty woman." He just doesn't get the fact they're supposed to be fat. That's how it works.
Is he reporting for the Olympics at this point? I think
that's later in series two.
Oh, okay. Because I know that he does go on to then describe javelin as sticks and discus as discs or something. When he does end up talking about the Olympics, he also says, as a genuine sentence, "Women, they shouldn't be here in the Olympics."
Really?
his sexism is peak.
Oh, it's rife.
Remember, this was the early 90s as well.
It was okay.
That was probably fine. You get a lot of Alan not understanding sports, as we've said. So in episode two, he's talking about show jumping. He says hitting all the right fences, again missing the point you're supposed to jump over them.
That's just so
consistent. So it's either groin strain, it's knowing nothing about the sports he's commentating on, and also there's a lot of commentary on horse racing throughout the two series as well. So a lot of comedy names for the horses.
And you'll be pleased to hear that I've compiled a humorous horsey-based quiz, which I shall be unveiling towards the end of the show.
So very, very exciting.
Coming up later.
Play along at home.
And I wonder who was more responsible for the horse names. It feels like it's more of a Morris Iannucci thing with the surrealism and the kind of abstract names coming into that.
It's got the Chris Morris stamp all over it.
I'd love to be in a room with those guys just coming up with weird names for horses.
I think also, I imagine that Chris Morris is probably the one responsible for talking about the going at various horse races as well. For example, the going today at Chepchesterfield was flappy to amorous.
I have a note on the going, which is different. The going at Tavistock today was good to flimsy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Oh, I like the bit where cricketers trick Alan into wearing Botham's cock box on his face.
Oh yes, that's great. That is great. And again, I think that's kind of repeated in the similar scenes in the day to day. But don't they end up throwing him in the showers as well?
Yeah, there's quite a few where he's reporting live from a locker room.
Yeah, there's quite a lot.
And
that
basically he's always on the receiving end of team banter, isn't he?
And not being aware that he's on the receiving end.
Yeah, doesn't
he just wants to be part of the team, doesn't he? Yeah.
After the cricket team throw Alan in the shower, you just hear him saying, "You're rubbish at cricket, even though you play for England."
Oh, in fact, speaking of showers, he's talking to is it a couple of horse riders or something? But
jockeys.
No,
jockeys.
There's one where basically there's a joking offer made that he could
come and have a shower with the female tennis player.
Then he literally tries to pin it down to logistics. Where and when is this going to happen? Like, how do I get in?
Yeah, he makes some awful jokes about the word shuttlecock and the fact that they're playing fact they're playing women's doubles. He's like, "Oh, you're playing with each other," and then he's like, "Go on, so when are we gonna meet? Should I meet you by the side of the pitch or should I meet you in the showers?"
And someone at the BBC's gone, "Oh, this works, I'll hire this guy."
There are loads of cases of him being really pervy and quite creepy like that.
If you could sum up his entire attitude to and knowledge of sport, I think
zero.
The quote I've got is from the boat race. He says, "I think Oxford are in the lead. I can't be sure. It could be Cambridge, but they're certainly in the lead."
He's got a 50% chance of being right, to be fair.
In that one, he does, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I really like in On the Hour, as opposed to the day to day, because On the Hour's on radio, they can include famous sports people who aren't actually there. Yeah.
Yes.
But day to day, you can't pretend it's Lynn for Christie when it isn't. But.
Although on the Hour, you can pretend it's Lynn for Christie and it's actually David Schneider.
Yeah.
and this bit is brilliant. So they're in the news report, they're saying Lynn for Christie has just run the 100 metres in 10 seconds. And then Alan's question is, oh, so you've just run that in 10 seconds. How far did you run? Was it half a mile?
Brilliant.
And then again, the chat becomes very homoerotic with Linford. He becomes obsessed with his arse.
Is there a groin injury?
It's the arse this time. Because that's actually the last Alan part in On the Hour, so we should perhaps play a little clip of that in as well.
Yes.
The buttocks of a man appear to be a lot more well-defined than those of a woman. You know, I was looking at you walking off there. The muscle definition on each of your buttocks as you walk is quite well-defined. There's no flab. It's rock hard. I mean, I wanted to prod it to see if it was as hard as it looks. Obviously, I couldn't do that. Fantastic. It's a great body. You deserve it. You've worked for it. Can't help admiring it. If I had a body like that, I'd be wandering around the flat naked all day, looking at myself in mirrors.
One quick question before we move on to the day today. How old do we think Alan is here? Because he claims he's, and I quote, over the other side of fitness.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I think, well, in real life, I think Coogan was about 25 or 26 at this point.
Yeah.
The character, I've got no idea.
I've got Alan's age down. I would guess he's around mid-30s at this point.
Mid to late, yeah.
On the other side of fitness. But then he does still feel like a sort of plucky young reporter, doesn't he? I'm not quite sure where to place him.
Just having a quick flick through the Coogan autobiography, it seems like they laid out a lot of things about Alan in terms of what car he drove, what his approach to kind of cleanliness was, what jumpers he wore, where he lived, but there doesn't seem to be a decision about his age, because I guess
they want us to piece it together like forensic scientists.
Well, fortunately, that's what we're here for. But I mean, I guess also it's not so important when you're doing it on radio. It only becomes more important when he's actually a visual character to consider how old he's supposed to be when he's on camera.
Very true. Which brings us nicely to the day today, I suppose.
This is the news.
Broadcast between January the 1st and February the 23rd, 1994. Do you start a brand new series on New Year's Day?
Well, they did.
Yeah, I guess so.
Bold.
There you go. In terms of writers, it's worth bearing in mind that Richard Herring and Stuart Lee were off the team at this point.
Replaced by
Peter Bainham, Graham Linehan and Arthur Matthews. Graham Linehan and Arthur Matthews obviously went on to be the writers of Father Ted, amongst many other things, and guest spot on I'm Adam Partridge as the executives.
Yeah, so you said Linehan and Matthews, but also Peter Bainham joining the writing team.
Yes, did mention him.
He did mention that.
Okay, I should be paying.
I was sure, coming to do the research for this, I thought Lee and Herring wrote on the day to day as well. So obviously they left it at that point. Is there any
or asked to leave? Perhaps. Mm.
Well, what I was going to ask.
There was a dispute. That's all we know.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do wonder if the implication to me seems like the dispute is very much around the character of Alan as well.
Right, kind of ownership of the character and who they're quite possibly.
Because, I mean, as Coogan does acknowledge, they wrote the sports reporter kind of sketches first of all, but then it was Coogan, Iannucci, Patrick Marber that kind of developed generic sports reporter into the Alan Partridge that we know today.
Yeah, I mean, he is undoubtedly Alan Partridge when he's a sports reporter, but I think you could also argue that he is considerably developed
he's less kind of David Coleman, John Motson by this point as well.
Not to say that that's the only part that Coogan plays. He also plays the parts of Alvin Holler, Bobby Sky, Hennetti in the Bureau, Spartacus Mills and many others in the day to day. But I wonder what it was about Alan that meant that he was the one who went on to be the full character.
Obviously, it's quite a low-key start for Alan in this as well. So, obviously, he's still very much a bit part in an ensemble. So, they possibly weren't thinking about developing him as a full, fully-fledged character in a sitcom at this point.
Yeah, I'd love to know the process that he went from being basically a kind of a bit player in the day-to-day to having his own series.
And another question, is there anyone else in the ensemble cast that you would like to have seen develop into a full series?
I think it would have been ahead of its time, but Rosie May...
the green correspondent. I think in 2016 could have an absolutely incredible satirical series about wellness and about foraging, and I think it would be amazing.
Who's the boss-eyed Southern American that Steve Coogan plays? I want to see him develop.
Oh yeah, the guy, yeah, the guy's forever being interviewed through a yellow lens about death row.
I want that guy.
I also like it. It would be quite similar to Partridge because he's quite useless, but Peter O'Hanrahan.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be quite interested to see some kind of fly on the wall documentary following Chris Morris about his daily life as a news anchor as well.
Yeah, just shouting at members of the public.
And whilst it's not a character as such, I genuinely would have watched The Bureau if it'd been extended.
It deserves a series.
Yeah.
Alan Partridge gets challenged by Chris Morris in his very first televised Partridgeism when he says that he supports the law, and then he's immediately challenged. Well, how do you support it? Just generally.
Very much falling victim to that Chris Morris character, putting him in his place and Alan having to suffer at his hands.
I did wonder if his humiliation in his first ever broadcast stayed with him when someone asks him if he supports the death penalty and he says, you know, yes, for treason and murder, he's very specific about how he supports the law then.
Yeah, exactly.
So, he's been caught out but once before.
I think this is also one of Alan's first uses of the word textbook. Don't know if any of you clocked that.
I didn't.
That passed me by.
He also refers to a man's tight lycra shorts within a minute on air.
Is that also where he starts referencing Women in Love, the D.H. Lawrence classic with Oliver Reed?
Yes.
Yes. So.
Which basically has two men wrestling in their pants, if anyone's seen it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not homosexual. Homoerotic is the word I was saying.
Homoeroticism is a very consistent Partridge trait.
Absolutely.
There's a little bit behind the scenes of what people want on telly when he says he's covering the bike races. Not a lot happening. Quite unremarkable. Oh, good. Someone's fallen. And also describes the cyclist as looking like cattle in a mad way, but cattle on bikes. And I also love the fact that there's obviously the people in the car with the bikes on the back, and he thinks
they're cheating.
Thinks they're part of the race. Wonderful.
I mean that's the thing about, he clearly knows nothing about any of these sports. So I think,
yeah, he's progressing.
I think, exactly. But he's making leaps and bounds in his career. But I think the large question about that is: Do we think he likes sport at all, or is he just doing this as a job?
No, he wants to be on telly, doesn't he?
Yeah, he wants to be famous.
This is the conduit that gets him there.
Yes, I think you've nailed it in one there. Yeah. I was just going to delve back into the Coogan autobiography again about the. It's quite in. I'd love to know more about how they initially identified Alan being the standout character from On the Hour into the day-to-day. But what I do have from Coogan's book is Patrick Marber was the one that proposed Alan having his own chat show. So when they basically started developing the day-to-day and Knowing Me, Knowing You at the same time.
Oh, that's why I ended up on telly so soon afterwards.
Yes. Mm. So they were kind of working on those projects at the same time, and they decided it would work better to introduce Alan to a television audience as part of an ensemble cast extrapolate him into his own show, which obviously does make a lot more sense. But still, the bit that I don't really know about is how they decided Alan Partridge was a standout character.
So when they were making
this,
they were making a spoof news show in its own right, but they also had one eye on getting Alan into people's.
Yeah, if you look at this chronologically, the radio show for Knowing Me, Knowing You came in late 92. So that was following the same year as On the Hour ending. So I guess whatever the conversation was from On the Hour into Alan doing radio, that thing about identifying him as the key character, that had already happened.
Interesting. Okay.
So yeah, if you go back to the dates of when these were originally broadcast, the day-to-day, the last episode of that series was broadcast on the 23rd of February 1994.
Yeah.
The first episode of Knowing Me, Knowing You
with Alan Partridge,
Kumkawat, was broadcast on the 16th of September of the same year. So not a huge gap, really.
No, so I think it's having a semi idea about how TV production works, they will have been making those at pretty much the same time.
Can we talk a little bit about the transitions between Alan's presenting and the sports action themselves?
The graphics.
Yeah.
They're so good.
I love the one where Alan's face like turns and morphs onto a trainer. The trainer just walks off.
They are Lawnmower Man style graphics, aren't they? And, I mean, not to skip ahead too much, but obviously in future episodes, we're going to be talking about Knowing Me, Knowing You. They also translate quite nicely into the opening credits of Knowing Me, Knowing You, his face on a piano, yeah, for example.
Yeah, great. Piano microphone. Yeah. I think it must be on Footballs and Like Him. Yeah.
Do you think that was, they are deliberately dated, or do you think that's genuinely the best you could do in 1994?
Well, I think it's a combination of the two.
Yeah.
I think that it's made to look bad, but it is also using pioneering technology.
I think you're right, because it's deliberately over the top, and even kind of Brass Eye kind of took the graphics even further. But yeah, I mean, it's supposed to look ridiculous, but it probably was the best you could achieve in kind of 93, 94. Yeah.
His contempt for the general public is something that is first exposed here as well. Mainly the scenes where he's reporting from the racing, surrounded by people berating him and shouting out loud.
He says, episode 2 of the day-to-day, consistently at the horse races in that episode.
Yeah, where there's a delay due to a collapsed paddock and and a renowned horse, well known for its sense of humour, is racing.
You also, about hating the general public, he says, a couple of youngsters there falling around, let's hope that tomfoolery doesn't escalate into blind, ugly violence. It's also like he has no kind of like trust of the public either, he always assumes the worst.
Yeah. Why are there children at the races?
Yeah,
well?
God, they must be so bored.
It's also the first time you hear him make the classic Alan noise as well.
And at the risk of getting a deluge of listener emails, I'm about to make a big statement.
Oh god.
Marple is a real place just outside of Manchester. Yeah. Marple Races, not a real place, doesn't exist. Marple Racecourse is not real. I'm going with it.
And if you think you've been there, you're bang wrong. Tom Stab will fight you in a car park.
Is it possible it existed in 1994?
Maybe someone who was alive in 1994 in and around the Marple area can give us some more information.
Yeah, or maybe not. It doesn't really matter.
His confusion continues as he interviews Mickey Doolan, a jockey, and from the off, he's absolutely baffled. He doesn't understand what's going on. Yeah. He thinks that he's a child, for one.
Yeah, Alan thinks the jockey, who is 33 years old, he thinks he's a 14-year-old child. And when the jockey sets him straight, Alan says, that's why you never see people like Brian Blessed riding horses. Yeah, it makes sense.
There is a light bulb moment, and he does get it, but he is shocked that Mickey Doolan is 33.
He also mistakes the people, do you call them tipsters? I can't remember really. The people doing the odds with their hands. Mistakes them for deaf people.
Signing for the deaf.
Yeah. One other thing which I think shouldn't go without mention in this episode is that this is the episode of the day today where Chris Morris blacks up.
I've got a note on this at the end.
I was surprised to see it.
Performing Uzi Lover on Rock TV. Uzi Lover. Yeah. In fact, there's also a really classic day-to-day scene. The scene at the pool.
Yes,
as well.
No one died.
There's another great Coogan scene about the road safety. The road safety bit. 60, 70, 80, get out of my way, you squares.
That's not the one where he's like, is this cool?
Yeah, do I look cool? Do I look cool? Does this look cool? Smashing your head through a window and stuff like that.
He smashes Dean McKay's head through a window. Is this cool?
Oh dear.
Then episode 3, you've got the Queen and John Major having a fight.
I was going to say, in episode 3, he's constantly repeated, isn't he?
Oh, in episode 3 is where Chris says to Alan, shut it, Alan, I want you to stop.
Yeah.
And another non-Alan but classic day-to-day moment is John Fashnew. That's John Fashnew. I remember that was a big hit in the playground at school.
Yeah. This is also where he asks the footballer, you missed the penalty. Why? And then goes on to say, you looked really stupid. Also, two bums in that scene.
Is that the Tanners who he describes as smelling like cat's musk?
No, he just follows that footballer into the showers. I haven't got a wife.
So that's very much where they've taken him being thrown in the showers, talking to criticism on the hour. They've transported.
I've literally got notes here where it's just like, very direct questions, incredibly poor interview technique.
But then he moves on to interviewing the female jockey. It opens with, you look fantastic on a horse. He's getting very sexist at this point. I'd like to ride you around the paddock, he says. And then at that point, she takes the top off and he has absolutely lost the plot.
He's flummoxed by breasts. Yeah.
His next question after she takes the top off is, how do you ride a horse?
I mean, it's fair to say he's briefly mindless.
Yeah.
Is it similar to when Susan asks him if she's going to go all the way with him?
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly
similar.
That.
Oh, yep. And he finishes the interview with a handshake because he doesn't know what else to
do. Yeah, and does, I don't know if you followed his eyes, but he does sneak quite a few glances.
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
Then we're on to episode 4, where he's back on soccer, which, or football, which I feel is probably where he's most comfortable. He's still not comfortable, but he's more comfortable.
I think this, Alan Partridge's Alan Partridge's countdown to World Cup 94, I think this is the most classic bit of Alan.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
From the early years, definitely.
Also the first outing of a Pringle sweater on Alan as well, which goes on to become a staple of later years.
I think we should play a clip of the World Cup roundup now.
Yes, that was a goal. Football. Shit! Did you see that? He must have a foot like a traction engine. Goal!
Well, question to the group. What's your favourite line from Alan Partridge's countdown to World Cup 94?
Twat!
Probably eat that.
He can stick it in.
I like. He must have a foot like a traction engine.
Yeah. I love their attention to detail when they try to explain the soccer meter to everybody.
Hold on
a sec.
Sorry, just as big football fans around the room, I assume you all perfectly understood the soccer meter.
Oh, it made perfect sense to me. Yeah, I mean, it was Alan's way to explain the group system.
Yeah, it's very, very simple. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, sort of. I like soccer. I like it when they put the ball in the sack.
Exactly. I love the bit when he kind of scrapes his side with one of the signs when he's trying to move it around. He's great
he's
Partridge
so
noise.
He's also already lost the Pringle sweater. Presumably, moving the soccer meter around is hard work.
And there's also the bit he's going, it's not written on that side. It should be, but it's not.
It's not.
Basically, they haven't rehearsed it. He hasn't checked it, and it's gone out like bad.
But at the end of the day,
classic Alan.
As he says, the proof is in the pudding, and the pudding in this case is a football.
Eat my goal.
Yep.
The goalie has got football pie all over his face.
Episode 5, he's on to rally driving, interviewing Susie Herper, played by Rebecca Front, one of the greatest comedy actresses to ever live. He says, he's again very sexist. It goes like a bomb, and the car's not bad either, etc. Smut.
He just can't help himself, can he?
Yeah.
Any female in his presence, he just has to go there.
He also relishes the opportunity to use the word bitch, which is a bit creepy. He's like, you know how to handle the bitch, the car's the bitch, you're the queen, and I like it.
A little later on, he also talks about some football teams, and as someone that doesn't really know anything about football, I wasn't sure if these were real teams or not. So are they actually called Chunky Norwich FC?
I think that is a real name.
Also, right, when he says the match is postponed due to a bent pitch, I thought that was a genuine thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
For fuck's sake.
Here is a question to the group then. How old are you when The Day Today first appeared on our televisions?
So that's 94?
Yes, 94.
So what month? 20 was October, wasn't it?
3 years ago.
The Day Today was Jan, Feb, 94.
So I was 11.
I was 12.
I was 12.
This is very much a maths test around the table, really.
10.
10. Because I'm just wondering, did anybody see this and think it was real for kind of the first few minutes of any shows or anything like that?
I very much went back to the day-to-day.
I wasn't watching this.
I think the day-to-day for me was a post-Brass Eye purchase.
12-year-olds weren't watching this.
I definitely watched this when it was on television.
Oh, that's really? Irresponsible parents.
Yeah, but you were about 50 by then.
Yeah, or 12, the same age as you, you shit.
50.
And when just generally scanning through this episode of the day-to-day, there was some weird random bit about like the war or in 1944. Did you notice who the stars of that little section were? They interview some old biddies who were alive in 1944, and it is two of the three hurdlers from the Know Me, Knowing You hurdle section, the Great British Women's 19-whatever year it was hurdle team.
1936. Anyway, we'll talk about that in the relevant
So that was a nice little
episode.
Nice sports through line there.
Yeah.
So we're on to the final episode of the day today, where he's talking self-defence.
Are we going to talk about that moment?
Which one's that?
With Chris Morris and Alan? The intimate moment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that moment.
Mm. I was surprised by Alan's reaction, and I think that speaks to their relationship and that Alan is very much under Chris Morris.
Were you really surprised? Are you referring to when Chris kisses him full on the mouth? And you're surprised that Alan didn't enjoy that?
I thought he just looked mildly disgusted.
He visibly hates it.
Yeah.
I just expected a more extreme reaction, but I think that he wasn't able to because...
He was caught unawares. It was shocked.
Yeah. So in this episode, we get more shout-outs to football teams. And again, as a non-fan of football, I wasn't sure. Are they actually called Sheffield Bonanza?
Again, I think that is a real team.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Sounds good.
I mean, I know loads about football.
I mean, I have heard of Manchester Coherent.
Yep.
Which one are they?
Oh, they're the best them, they? Of the Manchester teams. Yeah. Yep.
And Jill Morell, whoever she is, or they are.
Richmond Arithmetic.
Yeah. And Strathcarnage.
Carnage.
You just know that Morrison and Nietzsche
so
come up with those.
So that brings us towards the end of Alan's contributions to On the Hour and the Day Today. But obviously, a lot of racehorses are named throughout the course of both series. So Nick is going to hit us with a quiz where he's basically mixed up the real horses with some Nick generated horses. We're going to try and guess which ones are real and which ones aren't. And of course, following that, as always, Cars Against Alanity coming right up.
Okay, so here's the way that this quiz is going to work. I am going to read out the names of some real horses, and I'm going to humorously mix it up with some ones that I've made up myself. The challenge to you three is, as a team, can you tell, are these the real names of the horses, or are they false?
To be clear.
When you say real horses, you mean fictional horse names that have been in On the Hour and the Day Today.
That's the one.
Yeah. Real horses.
Real horses.
Okay, so we're going to be a bit like a university challenge team here, basically.
So conferring is allowed.
We can confer, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, the first horse is Erupted Pension.
Ooh. It's kind of like, is that Morris or is that false?
Oh,
I'm going no.
I'm
personally.
Going false, yeah. I'm going to say false.
I'm happy with the consensus. False.
It's real.
Oh,
it's real. Okay, next is Pixies Excuse Me.
I think I remember that one. I think that's true.
Okay, we're saying real then. I'll go with that.
That is real.
Yes.
We're on the board.
Yes, right, we've got one.
Cavalry Trouser Tips.
That doesn't ring a bell.
Oh, that's so ridiculous. I'm veering towards yes, personally. Yeah, Jed's putting his thumb up. He's not allowed to, but he's done that.
Okay. I'm happy to go with you. I think that could go either way, that one.
We'll say it's true.
It's definitely going to go either way.
Which way? You have to decide.
We're saying it's Morris
yep.
/ Shinucci.
And yes, that is real.
Yes.
Two on the board.
All right.
Next up, Iced Bun Massacre.
I think that's a Nick Alder creation.
Yeah, I'm going Nick.
Yeah, I made that one up. Yeah.
Okay, all right. That's a...
Diabetic Charlie.
Diabetic Charlie.
I think that might be a Nick creation again, you know?
Do you? It's tough because a lot of the names, they're almost... full comedy, but they just pull it back a little bit, don't they? What are you saying? What's the consensus here?
Oh, I don't know. It's ringing a bell.
Can we get that name one more time?
Diabetic Charlie.
Diabetic Charlie. Okay, basically, is it Chris Morris or is it Nick
True.
Alder?
I think it's
guys are going to have to push
I
you
think
for
it's
an answer.
Okay, we're saying Nick Alder.
It's a real horse.
I told you.
Sorry.
Bugger.
Okay, next up, we've got the People's Tiny Dancer.
That's real.
Okay.
That's real.
That's
I'll go with the group decision. We're saying it's Chris Morris.
It's Nick Alder.
Oh,
I was so confident. Well, I made up for I made up for it with the last one.
Well, that's now three correct and three incorrect.
Jeffrey's bad shoe.
I don't know.
I think that's. I'm going to say real.
We'll go Chris Morris.
It's the Nick Holder one.
Oh, he's done us.
Onion terror.
That's real.
Yeah, that is real.
Yeah. Back level.
Pet shop carvery.
I'm going Morris for that, personally. What are we saying as a team?
Yes.
Fine, yes. Morris. Yeah, okay.
It's Nick Holder.
Wow.
No. Shopping trolley hands.
That reeks of Nick Holder to me.
Yeah, Nick Holder. That is Nick Holder. Platitude Queen.
That's real.
That's
real.
That's Morris.
Yeah, that is real.
So how many have we got so far?
Well,
one, two, three, four,
well, there's loads. I think I'll just do a couple more. Lennox Lewis hand wash.
I think that's real because Lennox Lewis is a celebrity of the times.
I think Nick's made that one up. I think it's good.
But does Nick know who Lennox Lewis is?
Oh, good point. Okay, group decision. Adam.
I'm saying Chris Morris.
We've gone Morris.
Oh, I think it's a bit too early, but fine.
It's Nick Holder.
Yeah, I thought it was too early for Lennox Lewis.
He's done very well there.
Yeah. Your hand wash.
Foiled us again.
Margaret Margarine predicts the future.
I think that's a Nick Holder production.
I think that's a Nick Holder
one.
Yeah,
I've done that one.
I'll make it easy for you because you've had a bit of a shocker here. Mrs. Boothroyd's holiday dancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real.
Real.
Yeah. Well, that's that was my horsey quiz.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 correct. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wrong. Wow. So, I think that's the worst result we've had in a part of quiz yet.
Easily.
But basically, Nick knows his way around some fictitious horse names. Give me that.
We finally found his skill.
All right, let's switch straight on to Cards Against Alanity. Please gather your cards if you have them to hand. So I've given everybody two options. Their two options are both phrases used in either On the Hour or the Day Today. And I'm going to give you a sentence to complete. You have to complete them as best you can. Hand your cards into Jed. He's going to ping his bell for the winner. This is a one-round quiz. Winner takes all. This
does
not accumulate over the series.
Stakes have never been higher.
Christ, so you win the you can have the last sip of this bottle of beer I have in front of me, and the glory of knowing that all of our listeners think that you're some sort of hero or god or idiot. Kind of state figure or idiot. So the sentence to complete is: the cyclists look like cattle in a mad way, but cattle on blank. So the cyclists look like cattle in a mad way, but cattle on blank. I hope you remember which one is yours. Jed's going to have a look at them all now and select his victorious, glorious winner.
Oh, he's giving everything away with the facial expression.
Okay, so we'll read them out a bit. Here are the submissions. The cyclists look like cattle in a mad way, but cattle on a golden shower of athletic rain.
Topical.
The cyclists look like cattle in a mad way, but cattle on groin strain. The cyclists look like cattle in a mad way, but cattle on a two-headed sex beast.
Oh, he's done it! He's absolutely done it.
Unbelievable.
Just to complete the submissions, the final one. The cyclists look like cattle in a mad way, but cattle on blind, ugly violence. So,
also good.
Nick's the winner of that round. And that brings us to the end of our discussion of Alan's origins across On the Hour and the Day Today. Please join us next week when we're going to be starting our voyage into Knowing Me, Knowing You. We're going to be doing all 6 episodes of the regular series. Don't forget, if you want to join us for an in-depth discussion of the Christmas special, Knowing Me, Knowing You, you can do that live at the Prince Charles Cinema in London on Wednesday, November the 22nd. Details for that are on facebook.com/thepartridgepod and twitter.com/thepartridgepod. If you want to get in touch, you can email us thepartridgepod@gmail.com and on Twitter @thepartridgepod. So please do that. If you've got any questions or complaints, please do.
If you could try and reduce the complaints, that would be good.
Complaints to a minimum.
Send your complaints to producer Jed.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, @Jed Shepherd on Twitter. He's eager and waiting. So anyway, let's get on with the end of the show. here it comes, vis-a-vis the following, which is this. Goodbye.
Bye.
Join us.
Monkey Tennis is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. The artwork's by Dave McNamara, and the theme is an excerpt of the Black Beauty theme, Galloping Home, by Dennis King. To find out more about the records and podcasts made by Post-Pop, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey Tennis?
You better believe it, babe. There's a new chat in town.
Monkey Tennis?
Ice white shoes, ice white socks with navy blue double cadet strap.
Aha! Monkey Tennis?
I've just been told that Roger Moore is at Chiswick Roundabout.
Monkey Tennis?
Oh, what the heck? Rock and roll, let's all have a pair.
Monkey Tennis?
Yes, I am in a jacuzzi sipping spunt.
Alan.
And on that bombshell.
Monkey Tennis?
Aha.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.